Chapter 7. Instabilities. A clear difference exists between the canonical and relatively well-defined flows considered so far in the book, and the complicated fluid motion experienced in our daily life. The key to understanding the formation of these complex fluid motions is through the study of flow instabilities. A fluid flow is said to be unstable if a small perturbation to it does not decay to zero, but instead becomes amplified with time. Since real life is full of unavoidable perturbations, these instabilities are the building blocks for countless intricate flow patterns. In this chapter, we will look at a physical description of fundamental instability mechanisms in fluid mechanics. Gravitational instability. Rayleigh Taylor. It is instructive to start with a simple example, the most intuitive one being the Rayleigh Taylor instability. Consider two different fluids at rest. Invariably, they will have different mass densities. For example, olive oil in salad dressing is approximately 10% lighter than the vinegar. So, dressing bought at the store has the oil at the top and the vinegar at the bottom. This intuitive light-heavy conformation is actually the result of a fluid mechanics instability. Lord Rayleigh was the first to show formally that the situation where the heavy fluid is located below the light one is stable, whereas the reverse situation with the heavy fluid on top is unstable. This instability is illustrated in Figure 36b, using a heavy dye released on top of water in a glass. The initial configuration with light water at the bottom is unstable, and the heavy dye is seen to progressively penetrate into the water along elongated threads with characteristic protrusions. The physical argument for this instability is a net release of gravitational potential energy, GPE, in all situations where a parcel of the heavy fluid is located above a lighter one. Consider the flat horizontal interface of the hypothetical setup where all the lighter fluid is below the heavy one. Since that situation is unstable, it is of course just a thought experiment. Now imagine perturbing this interface in some arbitrary wave-like pattern. Doing so allows some of the top fluid to move down and some of the bottom fluid to move up. From the point of view of GPE, this is an exchange. Some light fluid replaces heavy fluid and vice versa, and therefore the total energy of the system decreases. To make this quantitative, consider two small volumes, capital V in the fluid, one in the bottom fluid and one in the top fluid, both near the interface. The GPE of each volume is given by MGH, where H is the height of their centre of mass and M is equal to rho, capital V, is the mass of the fluid. The total GPE before the perturbation of the interface, GPE sub old, is then equation 26. We denote by delta the size of the vertical perturbation of the interface, and therefore of the vertical displacement of each small fluid volume. The heavy fluid volume goes down by an amount delta, so its new GPE is rho sub heavy, capital V, G, open parenthesis, H sub heavy, minus delta, close parenthesis. Similarly, the light fluid goes up by delta, so its new GPE is rho sub light, capital V, G, open parenthesis, H sub light, plus delta, close parenthesis. As a consequence, the total GPE after motion of the interface is seen in equation 27. So the change in GPE due to the displacement of the interface, uppercase delta GPE, is equation 28. Since rho sub light is less than rho sub heavy, we have uppercase delta GPE is less than zero, and the motion of the interface always leads to a net release of gravitational potential energy. It is therefore favourable for the system to encourage this exchange, and it continues to be the case until all light fluid has moved above all the heavy fluid, at which point the minimum energy has been reached and the system is stable. This is the final state of the salad dressing. Rayleigh's work considered the case where the overturning of the fluid is driven by gravity. That instability also bears the name of the 20th century British physicist Geoffrey Ingram Taylor, universally hailed as the founder of modern fluid mechanics, and arguably the most influential fluid mechanician of all time. Celebrated for his work, combining both experiments and theory, and for his creativity, Taylor is also revered for being not just a physicist who dabbled in fluid mechanics, but somebody who wholeheartedly embraced the field in its totality, and as a result, spawned multiple generations of aspiring fluid mechanicians. Taylor realised that, beyond gravity, a similar instability could take place in the case where fluids with different densities are accelerated. Indeed, the strength of the gravitational field, G, is nothing but the acceleration due to gravity, and a body in freefall has an acceleration of magnitude exactly equal to G towards the Earth. Taylor realised that even the stable configuration of light fluid sitting on top of heavy fluid could be rendered unstable if the two fluids were subject to an upward acceleration, A, of magnitude larger than G. A liquid-liquid surface is then unstable when it experiences a net acceleration in the direction from the heavier to the lighter fluid. This version of instability is why we shake our bottle of salad dressing. The acceleration provided to the stable oil-vinegar configuration allows us to mix them. The famous Crab Nebula is another example, shown in Figure 36D. The cold and heavy remains of a star's explosion into a supernova accelerate inward towards lighter plasma, resulting in patterns characteristic of the Rayleigh-Taylor instability. Stability theory. The Rayleigh-Taylor instability, which we illustrated using experiments and physical arguments, can be studied from a more theoretical perspective. A well-established mathematical framework called stability theory has been developed to hunt for instabilities, not just in fluid mechanics, but in many topics of physical and life sciences. It belongs to a branch of mathematics called dynamical systems, which aims to study the solutions to differential equations and the possible transitions in the system from one solution to another. Stability theory works approximately in the following way. We are equipped with the equations that describe the phenomenon we are trying to understand. In the case of fluid mechanics, we have the Navier-Stokes equations. The first step is to consider a known solution of these equations. That solution might not be easy to realise in the lab, but it is a mathematical solution that is achievable under the right conditions. It is called a base state, and in fluid mechanics, we often refer to it as a base flow. The latter is, in general, a very simple flow, for example, the two quiescent fluids sitting on top of one another in Figure 36. Sometimes the base flow is complex and it has to be found computationally. The second step is to perturb the base flow by a small amount and see what happens. If all perturbations decay in time, the flow is stable. If some perturbations grow, then we determine which is the one that grows the fastest. The rationale behind this is based on experimental observations. If a particular perturbation to the flow grows faster than all the other ones, it will eventually take over the whole fluid dynamics and will therefore be the one measured experimentally. However, how can we figure out what part of a perturbation is the most important? After all, a system can be perturbed in an infinite number of different ways. Drawing from over 300 years of research, we usually know a natural way to project mathematically any perturbations on a set of so-called natural modes for the system. Although the theory underpinning this result is complicated, it makes intuitive sense. Fluid systems are analogous to musical instruments, which are characterized by intrinsic modes, for example, the vibrations of the strings on a guitar. In most cases, the natural modes are sinusoidal waves. The fundamental reason is due to celebrated work from Fourier, who showed how any arbitrary mathematical function can be written as a superposition of so-called Fourier modes, all taking the shape of sinusoidal functions. A crucial parameter of these modes is their wavelength, lambda, which is their spatial periodicity. In many experiments on flow stability, the first thing that we measure is the wavelength of the instability. Equipped with these modes, the final step is to then identify which one grows the fastest, which is called a modal growth analysis. The final result is a prediction for the most unstable wavelength, that is, the wavelength of the most unstable mode, and the rate at which the mode grows. Applying this procedure to the Rayleigh-Taylor instability, we find that any wave-like mode of surface deformation is unstable. For an infinite fluid interface with no surface tension, we obtain the result that the larger the wavelength of the wave, the faster the growth of the interface distortion between the two fluids. Historically, hydrodynamic instabilities have often been named after the people who discovered them and elucidated their physical mechanism. This is the case for the Rayleigh-Taylor instability, with first Rayleigh and then Taylor providing the physical and mathematical understandings we have today. Taylor, whose name is associated with three different instabilities in this chapter, is famous for his 1922 paper on the centrifugal instability, which reported the first quantitative agreement between stability theory and experiments. Since then, stability theory has been one of the most popular and successful avenues of research in fluid mechanics due to its ability to predict and explain experimental results. Capillary instability, Rayleigh plateau. The second instability in this chapter originates from surface tension, which we saw in Chapter 1 is an energy associated with the presence of fluid interfaces. The fact that a liquid has surface energy leads to the famous Rayleigh plateau instability, wherein long fluid threads cannot remain elongated but break up into small droplets. The physical rationale behind this instability is remarkably simple. An elongated liquid thread of given volume can decrease its total surface area, and therefore its surface energy, if it changes form and separates into multiple droplets. So we can now start blaming surface tension for our dripping taps. A simple mathematical approach helps to understand this instability. Consider an elongated cylinder of liquid of length capital L and radius capital R, as in figure 37b. The total volume of fluid is capital V is equal to pi capital R squared capital L, and if it is long enough, its surface area is approximately capital A is approximately equal to 2 pi capital R capital L, which is approximately equal to 2 capital V divided by R. Now let us imagine cutting this cylinder into capital N identical droplets, each of radius A. Conservation of volume imposes the relationship capital N multiplied by 4 pi A cubed divided by 3 equals capital V. So the number of droplets is capital N equals 3 capital V divided by 4 pi A cubed. The total surface area, approximately capital A, of the capital N droplets is equal to approximately capital A equals capital N multiplied by 4 pi A squared, which equals 3 capital V divided by A. The ratio between the total surface area of the droplets to that of the original fluid thread is given by approximately capital A divided by capital A equals 3 capital R divided by 2A. Hence, the droplets are predicted to have a surface area smaller than that of the cylinder, if A is greater than 1.5 capital R, and it is thus energetically favourable for an elongated cylinder of fluid to break up into droplets if they are large enough. The associated instability, sometimes referred to as surface tension-driven breakup or capillary instability, is associated with the work of Joseph Plateau, a 19th-century Belgian physicist and former child prodigy. Plateau's work on surface tension and droplets laid the groundwork for much of the modern science of thin films and foams. He was also a pioneer in the development of moving images and animated cartoons. Beyond the physical picture outlined previously, Plateau realised that we need a bit more than a final state of lower energy. For the instability to happen spontaneously, surface energy needs to be released as soon as the interface is perturbed. Considering infinitesimal sinusoidal perturbations with wavelength lambda of the liquid thread from figure 37b, Plateau showed rigorously that as long as lambda is greater than 2 pi capital R, these small perturbations will decrease the area of the interface, freeing up some surface energy to accelerate the liquid and allowing the process to continue until pinch-off and the creation of droplets. What does Plateau's analysis mean for the final sizes of the resulting droplets? When a liquid thread is unstable with wavelength lambda and every periodic contraction of the thread collapses into a single droplet, conservation of volume implies that the radius A of each droplet is given by 4 pi A cubed divided by 3 equals lambda pi capital R squared, and thus A equals open parenthesis 3 lambda capital R squared divided by 4 close parenthesis 1/3. Plateau's criterion for the spontaneous instability, lambda is greater than 2 pi capital R, leads then to a minimum size A is greater than capital R, open parenthesis, 3 pi divided by 2, close parenthesis, 1/3, which is approximately A is greater than 1.68 capital R. This criterion is slightly more stringent than the argument based solely on the consideration of the surface energy of the final state. A is greater than 1.5 capital R. How does this compare with the size of droplets seen in experiments? The energetic argument suggests that the largest decrease in surface energy occurs for A, or lambda, as large as possible above plateau's threshold. Indeed, for a given volume of liquid, a mathematical theorem states that a sphere of the same volume is the shape with the smallest possible surface area. So starting from any fluid mass, the state of lowest surface energy will be the one with all the fluid gathered into a single spherical drop. However, this is not what is observed experimentally. Liquid threads breaking up into droplets do so at a very specific wavelength, in a manner that is well reproducible experimentally. The fundamental reason is that although surface tension is the driving force for the instability, what is observed in experiments is not the mode with the least surface energy, but the mode that grows the fastest. Of all the possible ways in which the interface can be perturbed, one grows faster than any other, and is the one seen experimentally. That mode is set by a competition between the driving and the dynamics. Why exactly intermediate wavelengths are preferable was elucidated by Rayleigh, who carried out experiments on liquid threads and then showed theoretically that lambda cannot be too large, despite the fact that the larger value of lambda, the smaller the final surface energy. Indeed, if lambda was large, the instability would involve creating periodically very long threads of liquid. These elongated threads would then need to contract in order to make drops. Since the fluid starts from rest, each thread needs a certain time to accelerate from rest, and the longer the thread, the longer it takes to set in motion. The most unstable wavelength seen in experiments is therefore a compromise. It needs to balance the requirement of releasing a sufficient amount of surface energy, lambda large enough, with having the instability occurring sufficiently fast, lambda small enough. Rayleigh's calculation showed that the wavelength growing the fastest was lambda is approximately equal to 9 capital R, well above the threshold based solely on energetics. Lambda is greater than 2 pi capital R, and in excellent agreement with experimental observations. Because of both Plateau and Rayleigh's important contributions, this phenomenon is now known as the Rayleigh-Plateau instability. While the classical version of the instability is for a free-standing liquid column, it takes many other forms in our daily lives, and as such has been a source of study for over 200 years. For example, instead of a free-standing liquid, a thin film deposited on a surface can also be unstable. Examples are films of liquid located on the ceiling, for example, due to humidity in a bathroom or to water vapour in a kitchen. Surface tension would prefer the film to remain flat, but gravity would like the fluid to fall down. As a compromise, the film spontaneously breaks up into an array of small droplets. Another example is liquid deposited on a rigid fibre. The same physical principle as the classical Rayleigh-Plateau instability, a decrease of surface energy, predicts that the liquid will break up into droplets. This phenomenon is familiar in nature, seen for example for water drops on plant stems in Figure 37c, or dew droplets on spiderwebs in Figure 37d. Centrifugal instability. Taylor-Couet. Returning to fluids in motion, another instability occurs for rotating flows called the centrifugal instability. It is a historically important example because it is the first time a quantitative understanding of a Navier-Stokes instability was shown to be in full agreement with the experiments. The simplest setup consists of a fluid located in the space between two rotating coaxial cylinders, as illustrated in Figure 38. A. Side view. B. View from above. The geometry is reminiscent of that of a shear flow, originally studied by Couet, but adapted to the circular geometry by Taylor, and it is now known as a Taylor-Couet cell. The same geometry is used in many rheometers to measure the mechanical properties of complex fluids. As the cylinders turn in the Taylor-Couet cell, the fluid in contact with them also rotates. Consider now what happens when we change the angular rotation of the inner cylinder, keeping the outer at a fixed speed. When the inner cylinder rotates slower than some critical value, the flow is stable and all parcels of fluid just rotate around. However, if the inner cylinder rotates faster than that threshold, the flow becomes unstable and it transitions to a new dynamical state, exhibiting three-dimensional donut-like vortices oriented perpendicular to the axis of rotation. The fact that a rotating flow could be unstable was anticipated by Lord Rayleigh. Back in 1888, he derived a criterion for such an instability to occur in the case where the role of viscosity can be neglected. To understand the origin of the instability, von Karman proposed an explanation of Rayleigh's criterion based on an analysis of the forces experienced by the fluid. Consider a small parcel of fluid located at a distance r from the axis of rotation and moving with speed u. If omega is the local angular speed of the rotating fluid, we have u equals omega r. It is a classical result of physics that a body in rotation is subject to a centrifugal force directly radially outwards and of magnitude capital F sub out is equal to mr omega squared. However, before the instability, the fluid is not seen to move outwards. So what acts against the centrifugal force? Since the fluid rotates around the axis of the cylinders, an inward fluid force, capital F sub in, must be balancing the outward centrifugal force. This fluid force is in fact due to the distribution of pressure, which adjusts throughout so as to exactly balance the centrifugal force. This is similar to the hydrostatic pressure generated in fluid subject to gravity, where the gravitational force balances the force due to pressure in the fluid. In the case of the rotating fluid, there is similarly, at every point in the fluid, an equilibrium between the outward centrifugal force and the inner force due to the pressure, solid arrow, that is capital F sub in, equals capital F sub out. To understand the instability, we then have to perturb the moving fluid. However, because the fluid rotates, it possesses angular momentum, and, in the absence of viscous friction, any perturbation can only be made in a way that conserves its momentum. We saw already in Chapter 6, via Helmholtz's vortex laws and Kelvin's circulation theorem, some consequences of the conservation of angular momentum for flows. The angular momentum for a small parcel of fluid of mass m is equal to capital L equals mru equals mr squared omega, and since it is conserved, we can express the magnitude of the two balanced forces discussed earlier as capital F sub in equals capital F sub out equals mr omega squared equals capital L squared divided by open parenthesis mr cubed close parenthesis. To analyse the fate of a perturbation, let us consider a small parcel of fluid initially located at a distance r sub 1 from the axis of rotation and with angular momentum capital L sub 1. Suppose that fluid was then displaced to new location r sub 2 is greater than r sub 1, thus taking the place of a parcel of fluid that had angular momentum capital L sub 2. Since the fluid keeps its angular momentum with it, the outward centrifugal force exerted on the parcel of fluid that moved to r sub 2 with its momentum capital L sub 1 now has magnitude capital F nu over out equals capital L 2 over 1 divided by mr cubed over squared. However, except for this perturbation, the surrounding fluid has not changed, so the distribution of pressure remains identical. The radically inward pressure force is still thus of the magnitude it was before the new fluid parcel came in. That is, capital F, nu over in, is equal to capital F, 2 over 2, divided by mr, 3 over 2, where L sub 2 is the angular momentum of the fluid that has been displaced. To decide if the flow is stable, we need to compare the magnitude of the two forces exerted on the parcel of fluid that has been displaced. If capital F nu over out is less than capital F nu over in, that is, capital L 2 over 1 is less than capital L 2 over 2, the force from the pressure wins, and a net inward force brings the fluid back to where it started. The flow is therefore stable. In contrast, when capital F nu over out is greater than capital F nu over in, that is, capital L 2 over 1, is greater than capital L 2 over 2, the outward force wins, and the parcel of fluid is pushed further away from the axis of rotation. In that case, the initial perturbation is amplified and the flow is unstable. The result is the stability criterion originally derived by Rayleigh. The fluid flow is subject to the centrifugal instability if the magnitude of the angular momentum decreases away from the axis of rotation at one point in the fluid. Given the relation between circulation and angular momentum, this is similar to saying that, for the instability to take place, the circulation has to decrease radially outwards somewhere in the fluid. Given the relation between circulation and angular momentum, this is similar to saying that, for the instability to take place, the circulation has to decrease radially outwards somewhere in the fluid. Note that an alternative physical argument can be used to predict the instability by considering the total kinetic energy in the displaced parcels of fluids. The exchange of fluid parcels turns out also to be energetically favourable as soon as capital L 2 over 1 is greater than capital L 2 over 2. The stability analysis of Rayleigh ignored the friction in the fluid, that is, the viscosity, in order to make use of the conservation of angular momentum. In a landmark 1923 paper, Taylor set out to study the viscous version of this problem theoretically and experimentally. He first carried out a full stability calculation for the flow and was able to solve the resulting mathematical equations exactly, a heroic task, since this was well before personal computers could solve differential equations. His theoretical results derived the region in parameter space where the flow was predicted to be stable or unstable, and they were in perfect agreement with experiments. This study directly comparing a full stability report with experiments was the first of its kind, and it has remained the benchmark in the field for almost 100 years. Past the stability point, the rotational flow transitions to a new state. Fluid parcels are no longer just rotating with the cylinder, but they display three-dimensional motion. Just after the instability, the flow takes the form of alternating donut-like eddies aligned perpendicular to the axis of rotation of the cylinder. Now called Taylor vortices, they are illustrated schematically in Figure 38c and shown experimentally in Figure 38d. If the angular speed of the inner cylinder is increased even further, the flow undergoes a cascade of additional instabilities and is now used as a canonical case study of the transition to turbulence. Viscous fingering instability. Safman-Taylor. We next consider a famous instability occurring between two fluids of different viscosities. The prototypical situation consists of one fluid pushed against another one under confinement. When the displacing fluid has a lower viscosity than the one it replaces, the moving interface between the two fluids is unstable to small perturbations and develops interpenetrating protrusions of each fluid moving into the other one, resulting in a characteristic finger-like pattern. This instability is known as the viscous fingering instability, and it turns out to be important in industry. To understand the physical mechanism for the instability, we have to examine the dynamics of a moving interface between two fluids. For the instability to take place, the fluids need to be geometrically confined to ensure that the flow is dominated by viscous friction with its environment. This setup is generically referred to as a porous medium, and classical examples of porous media include rocks, cement, wood, and bones. The key feature of all flows dominated by viscous friction is something we already saw in Chapter 3, namely the Hagen-Poiset law, Equation 4. That formula predicted the flow rate in a pipe as a function of the applied pressure. A similar formula is applicable to all flows dominated by the effects of viscosity. In all these cases over a length capital L, we always have a pressure drop, delta capital P, that is proportional to the average fluid velocity, capital U, and viscosity, mu, in the form of equation 29, where kappa has units of square of a length and is called the permeability of the material. This equation is known as Darcy's equation for flow in porous media. The permeability kappa is purely a function of the geometry of the domain through which the fluid moves. We know its exact value for many geometries. For example, the straight pipe from Chapter 3. It is equal to capital D squared divided by 32, when capital D is the diameter of the pipe. See equation 4. But also for flow between two rigid surfaces. Kappa equals capital H squared divided by 12, where capital H is the distance between the surfaces. Flow around arrays of obstacles, etc. The relationship between the geometry of the material and its permeability is therefore known. The result in equation 29 is the key to understanding the fingering instability. Consider the moving interface illustrated in figure 39b, where the fluid of viscosity mu sub 1 is advancing towards that of viscosity mu sub 2. The interface is straight and perpendicular to the direction in which it moves with speed capital U. Now imagine a small perturbation of size delta to the location of the interface. When delta is greater than zero, the perturbation is in the direction of motion, that is, from fluid 1 to fluid 2, and in the other direction if delta is less than zero. To analyse the fate of this perturbation, we apply Darcy's equation to both fluids and compute the change in pressure induced over the small distance delta. Let us call the pressure at the location of where the interface would be if there were no perturbation, P sub zero. The formula in equation 29 says that the pressure decreases in the direction of the fluid motion, so when applied to fluid 1, we obtain a change in the local interfacial pressure to a new value, P sub 1, given by open parenthesis P sub 0 minus P sub 1 close parenthesis divided by delta equals mu sub 1 capital U divided by kappa. When delta is greater than 0, the pressure therefore decreases slightly near the interface on the side of fluid 1, or increases slightly when the perturbation is the other way. Delta is less than 0. The same argument can be applied to fluid 2, so the interfacial pressure P sub 2 on the side of fluid 2 satisfies open parenthesis P sub 0 minus P sub 2 close parenthesis divided by delta is equal to mu sub 2 capital U divided by kappa. These two equations give us access to the pressures on either side of the moving interface, and the difference in pressure is equation 30. The result in equation 30 is the key to predicting the evolution of the perturbation. Given that capital U is greater than zero, let us first consider the case with delta is greater than zero. If mu sub 2 is less than mu sub 1, that is, the displacing fluid is the more viscous one, then we see that P sub 1 is less than P sub 2, and the pressure from fluid 2 is larger. A net force is thus applied to the interface that stabilizes the perturbation. In contrast, when the less viscous fluid is moving towards the more viscous one, that is, mu sub 2 is greater than mu sub 1, we obtain that P sub 1 is greater than P sub 2. In that case, a net pressure force is exerted on the interface and the initial perturbation is amplified, leading to an instability. The same result holds when the perturbation is directed towards fluid. 1, open parenthesis, delta, is less than 0, close parenthesis. Here, mu sub 2 is greater than mu sub 1 leads to P sub 1 is less than P sub 2, so a net force is applied in the direction of the perturbation, again indicating an instability. This analysis therefore predicts the occurrence of an instability if the interface moves from the less to the more viscous fluid, that is, if the product mu sub 2 minus mu sub 1, capital U, is positive. This is the fundamental condition for the fingering instability to appear. Under that condition, protrusions in both directions are amplified and result in the characteristic patterns of interlocking fingers illustrated in figure 39c. An experimental illustration of the instability is shown in figure 39d, obtained with air displacing a colloidal suspension. This instability is also known as the Safman-Taylor instability. Philip Safman was a British-American applied mathematician who studied in Cambridge. In collaboration with Taylor, he ran experiments demonstrating the instability, which had been predicted a few years earlier, carried out the full stability analysis, and further focused on the shape of fingers. After moving to the US, he became famous for many other contributions to fluid mechanics, including vortex dynamics and flows in biological membranes. Viscous fingering is important in many industrial processes, most famously in oil recovery. When crude oil does not flow out of an underground reservoir on its own, different techniques can be used to extract it, called enhanced oil recovery. For example, gases can be injected, such as CO2, but also steam or water. The issue is that crude oil can be very viscous, hence the conditions are often such that a less viscous fluid is used to push against a more viscous one. As a result, the Safman-Taylor instability occurs and the recovery is very inefficient. One remedy is to mix polymers with water to increase its viscosity sufficiently so as to prevent the instability. Other industrial situations where viscous fingering plays an important role include hydrology, filtration, and CO2 sequestration. Shear layer instability. Kelvin Helmholtz. Our final case study in the world of flow instabilities arises when two fluid streams moving at different speeds are put in contact with one another. This setup is known as a shear layer, a region where a large jump in fluid velocity occurs on a small length scale, and it is illustrated in Figure 40A, which can be found in the print version of the book. As a result of this difference in speeds, the interface between the two fluids starts to develop a wave-like motion. These waves are further amplified downstream, rolling up like surface waves in the ocean and resulting in the creation of large vortices separating the two fluids. This instability was first discovered by Helmholtz and Kelvin independently from one another within a span of 3 years, and is now known as the Kelvin-Helmholtz instability. It can be rationalised using a physical principle first seen in Chapter 5 for flows at higher Reynolds numbers. For a perfect fluid with no swirling motion, we saw that conservation of energy in the fluid led to Bernoulli's equation for the pressure P, density rho, and speed capital U, stating that the combination P plus rho capital U squared divided by 2 is constant. The consequence of that equation is that, for such flows, when the speed increases, the pressure decreases. We already used the same idea in Chapter 6 to elucidate the lift generated on aeroplane wings. To explain why a shear layer is unstable, consider the flat interface between the two fluids and let us imagine perturbing it as shown in Figure 40A. The initial perturbation of the interface is directed towards fluid 1, and therefore it decreases slightly the total area available for fluid 1 to flow. Recall from Chapter 3 that, due to conservation of mass, the flow rate, which is equal to the product of speed with area, must be constant for an incompressible flow. If the area decreases, the speed of fluid 1 therefore needs to increase slightly to compensate for it. Similarly, since the perturbation is directed away from fluid 2, the area available for its flow increases, so for the same reason, fluid 2 slows down slightly. We can then use Bernoulli's equation to estimate the change in pressure in each fluid resulting from the perturbation. Let us denote, by P sub 0, the pressure in the fluids near the interface before any perturbation, and by P sub 1 and P sub 2, the new fluid pressures near the interface inside fluids 1 and 2, respectively. In fluid 1, the speed of the fluid increases in magnitude, and therefore, from Bernoulli, pressure necessarily decreases, so P sub 1 is less than P sub 0. Similarly, in fluid 2, the fluid speed decreases, and thus the pressure has to increase, that is, P sub 2 is greater than P sub 0. The initial perturbation of the interface shown in Figure 40A therefore leads to changes in pressure on both sides of the interface, with P sub 2 being greater than P sub 1. As a result, a net pressure force is induced in the direction of the perturbation, which amplifies it and leads to an instability. Of course, if instead the perturbation were initially directed towards fluid 2, a similar analysis would lead to P sub 1 is greater than P sub 2, again indicating an instability. This Kelvin-Helmholtz instability occurs in situations where two fluids, flowing at different speeds, are brought together, and it impacts a wide range of processes in industry and nature. For example, it takes place in the ocean in all instances where underwater currents, flowing at different speeds, merge. We can also routinely see the instability in the atmosphere, as illustrated in Figure 40B, where the rolling up of the vortices is visualised with the aid of clouds. The same instability has been seen on other planets, as illustrated in Figure 40C, with the gas atmosphere of Saturn as visualised by NASA's Cassini probe. Even though the flow is in the turbulent regime in that case, the phenomenology of the instability remains valid. In industry, the Kelvin-Helmholtz instability is an important mechanism to generate mixing between different fluids. This can be intuitively understood when examining the sketch in Figure 40A. During the development of the instability, the interface between the two fluids rolls up, so the interfacial area increases as the instability develops downstream of the initial contact. The two fluids further intertwine. The resulting mixing can have major consequences. For example, if the two fluids react chemically to produce a third product, then the instability will promote the chemical reaction. This is what happens inside your car engine, where the instability facilitates the mixing between different reactants and helps combustion. If the two fluids are at different temperatures, then the instability will help the homogenization of the temperature. In the ocean, it also contributes to the mixing of nutrients for biological organisms.